Two, there.
There it is. And we're live with another SGR coffee break. This is number three. This is like 3 weeks in a row. This is
I know,
quite
and it's the
the
last one of the year, so
thing.
because we're quitting while we're ahead.
Hey, they always say go out on top, right? So, I mean,
Yep.
we've got this perfected. We got video now and
Yep.
audio that and I don't even edit it. It's pretty great. It's kind of nice when you're not drunk, like, on other podcasts. You could just
That's because we have coffee.
coffee.
You'll never leave me, coffee. Never.
World doesn't have enough coffee, I don't think.
Coffee or wine? You need more coffee, more wine. Life is good.
I can go with that. And beer. Lots of beer. I was almost today because it is. We are currently recording this in the afternoon hour, and I almost kind of went. I have this coffee stout in my refrigerator. I almost,
Oh.
because it's like it has coffee in it, so therefore I'm still
Yeah, it does
technically
have
drinking
coffee in
coffee.
it. And actually, I've been hearing that coffee beer is becoming a thing.
Oh, it is. Especially
Like, I don't mean like they put coffee in beer. I mean like they're making coffee that tastes like beer,
like
which I
beer.
think is weird, but
I don't know how I would handle that.
see, now you're making me want to have some Young's Double Chocolate Stout, which I haven't had in forever. Because I haven't drunk beer in forever, but man, that sounds really good right now.
Need to get on that.
Yeah, that sounds like I have to leave the house and go to the store or something and
That's why I did a lot this morning. I'm already
get.
back in my PJs, so it's all good.
Well, see, I went to yoga this morning instead and got my ass kicked because we did all this arm and shoulder work. Like what we did was that she had us lay down on a blanket and then scoot across the floor and back using just our forearms like this. Like the first three were okay, and they're like, motherfucker. And yeah, I'm pretty much gonna be T-Rex arms the rest of the day. I don't think I could lift my arms anymore.
This sounds exhausting.
It was exhausting, but it's a good thing. You know what else is a good thing?
All
Games of
the
the
good
year.
stuff that happened this year.
Yes, a lot of good stuff happened this year. It's weird because last year, it's kind of funny talking to people about games of the year this year versus last year because last year I didn't like very much stuff, and everyone seemed to love everything from last year. And then this year, I love everything, and everyone seems to hate everything. So either that means the mass populace has no taste, or I have no taste, and I'm going to go with the former, that the mass has no taste.
Yeah, well, everybody likes to bitch about everything, and it's just.
Right.
I started working on a Corner of Randomness article that was kind of diving into we need to stop being so hateful. Just like, guys, I gave up. I was like, this is just not.
You're
This is a
preaching to
wrap.
the choir, man.
Yeah. But I had a lot of fun with a lot of games this year, actually.
I did too.
It was kind of hard narrowing down my games of the year. The guides wasn't so hard because apparently I only reviewed like eight guys or something like that this year, so
It
it
was
was pretty
actually
easy.
very hard for me to come up with my guides of the year because I reviewed a bunch. First, I was like, did I not review very many? I did review a bunch, but I didn't. Most of the ones I reviewed were not that great. Or and unfortunately, I have some guides I haven't even finished reviewing yet, like Sunset Overdrive, because I didn't get that till after I finished playing the game. And then I had to work on my next review for work, and I haven't even touched Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. So both of those guides could be like fantastic guides, but I have no idea, and it's kind of sad. Which is kind of like what happened with last year. I couldn't finish Legend of Zelda: A Link Between Worlds, but before the end of the year, and I did like the first week in January, and it made me sad because I didn't nominate it for like one of the best guides of the year or even game of the year because it would have been for both.
Yeah, I love that game. I'm actually thinking about playing it, going through it again this year.
I got too much else to do this year. I mean, everyone voted for me to play Wind Waker HD. So that is the next Zelda game for me to attack is Wind Waker HD. And maybe
Well,
by the time I finish that Majora's Mask 3D will
sure.
be out.
Yeah. Nintendo, you evil bastard.
Yes, this is true. But why don't we go through games of the year first, and then we'll go through guides of the year. So we'll start at number five. So, Chris, what did you have for your number five game of the year?
My number five is Civilization Beyond Earth.
And this surprises me, because most people I know that played it just said it was a very weak expansion.
Yeah, if you were looking for something brand new, you know, some sort of new IP, I think a lot of people were also kind of hoping for an Alpha Centauri kind of spiritual successor. And, you know, I looked at the screenshots, I watched a couple of the movies, so I kind of knew what it was going to be. I didn't see that it was going to be anything more than Civ 5, just set with a space theme. So I like the setting. I like what they did as far as the tech tree and your progression. I like the fact that you always have aliens kind of coming at you, so you're constantly trying to deal with that. And to me, it was a lot of fun, so I very much enjoyed it, and I played it at, we were doing Extra Life, played it after that, so it's just one of those games that you can't just sit down and play for an hour. So usually when I get ready to play it, I block out an entire day, because I've tried doing the whole save it, come back, and continue playing, and it never works out, because I always forget what the hell I'm doing. So, yeah, it's a fun game for me, and I got exactly what I was expecting out of it, so go team. What's your number five?
My number five is Sunset Overdrive. And this was a game that I cared nothing about until I went and saw it at E3. And it 100% fulfilled my expectations. It is just, it's over-the-top silliness with the shooter. And so many genres and pop culture is just made fun of in this game. I mean, what's won it over for me 100%, I mean, I was already sold on it, but, you know, when my character starts arguing with the voiceover narration, and then they get into a fuck you, no, fuck you argument back and forth, I mean, it's hard to top that. Yeah. And but really sealed it was when I got to the faction with the LARPers, who, because of the accident with the overcharge, they now believe that they are 12th century medieval knights. And so one of them, they only know him as Hardcore, and all he says is Hardcore the entire time, which is such a great making fun of Game of Thrones. Everything about it was just great. If you just don't take it seriously, it is fantastic. And it's not your average shooter. Like, you just don't run around and shoot things. You actually have to be stylistic, and which makes it incredibly fast-paced.
Yeah, this is one of those games where it seemed like you either loved it or you hated it. I didn't really see a whole lot of people saying this is a middle ground. It was all right. It was fun. It was either, oh my god, this is so much fun, or this is really dumb because of, like, you know, they just took the whole callbacks and making fun of stuff too seriously, so I don't know. But
I mean, there was a side quest where you had to save this guy who was creating some sort of contraband stuff, and you find out his name is Jesse. And as you're saving him, they're like, you know, what are you doing? He goes, yeah, science, bitch! Like, okay, you know, I'm sold. This is great. But you got to have a sense of humor, and you just can't expect it to be hardcore and serious. It's not Call of Duty. It's crazy, bright, orange sunshine with killer mascots. I mean, seriously.
Hey. If it's fun, that's all that matters.
That's right.
So what do you have for number four?
Well, my number four was a little, it's also a shooter, but it's much darker than Sunset Overdrive. It was Wolfenstein The New Order. Which
One that I think it was on sale at Target, and I almost picked it up this week.
I recommend it. It's not your typical Wolfenstein. It's not, you know, going from corridor to corridor, going shooty, shooty, bang, bang. I mean, yes, you do go shooty, shooty, because seriously, it's Wolfenstein. Of course, you're going shooty, shooty the whole time. But the cool thing about it is, you know, how dark just, well, first of all, the whole idea of it being alternate history, kind of like the way Resistance is. I love the idea of the alternate histories, and this is alternate histories. If the Nazis won World War II, what would the world be like in the 50s? And which is, you know, pretty darn depressing. But so he, so BJ wakes up, he gets into an accident early on in the game, he wakes up so many years later, and, you know, and so he's part of the Resistance trying to, you know, overthrow Death's Head. No mention of what happened to Hitler, although surely by this time he's long gone, because it's been several years later. But he, but the big thing that got me in it was not just, you know, the shooting mechanics, which are fun, and the whole idea of all the bionic commanders, and the idea that you can use stealth, or you can use full frontal assault, which, of course, that's what I did, because I suck at stealth. And but the cool thing to me was how the choices you made affected the game, because you had to make this horrible choice early on, and I mean horrible choice. And depending on what you choose greatly affects who is in the Resistance. And it's not just, you know, who you choose to save, because basically what it comes down to is Death's Head has two of your teammates, and you have to pick one to live and one to die.
Oh, joy.
Yeah. And so it's not just about, okay, so you pick this guy to live, he's going to be in your party. It's, depending on who you pick to live, it changes your party altogether. Party's a bad way to explain, but who is all in your Resistance altogether.
Gotcha.
And it was very dark and deep, and not what I was expecting from Wolfenstein. I was expecting, I guess, a little bit of how it was back in the day. You know, serious, but yet not so serious, I mean, seriously, because you have blue walls and chain guns and stuff. And the one time it did get not serious is that if you go upstairs in your Resistance house and you take a nap, you will experience the original Wolfenstein.
Yes.
And you have to, like, kind of go through, and if you die, it's like, ugh, woke up from that nightmare. And whenever you find any computers, like in the Nazi camps, if you look at them, the screensaver is the from Wolfenstein 3D.
Oh,
so there's little, you know, throwbacks like that, but the big thing is it's just switch darker and deeper than the original Wolfenstein was. So that's why that's up there for me. And if you like a challenge, holy crap, this thing will challenge you.
Nice.
I mean, I had to break it down to easy because I can barely hack it on normal. And I know someone who played it twice, got through both sides of the story on Uber, so all power to you, dude. You're crazier than I am.
Damn.
It looks like your number 4 is just like my number 3.
Imagine that. We both picked Valiant Hearts, The Great War, which was something I had, the first time I saw it, it was at E3, and this game came out extremely fast after E3, actually.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't on my radar. In fact, I saw it, was like, oh, that looks really interesting. So I put it down as, you know, you got to kind of keep watch on this. And then it came out like a month later. So I saw it come up on Steam, and I think we both started playing it at pretty much like the same time.
Well, actually, I got a review copy, and I played it. And I remember when I was done, I texted you immediately. I'm like, okay, you need to go pick up Valiant Hearts. And you're like, yes, ma'am. And the next week you played it, you're like, okay, yeah, that was amazing. It's not very long. It probably took me 2 days to complete.
Yeah, I think maybe it was like a three-ish, maybe four-ish hour game, because you just kind of take your time.
I want to say about maybe 5. And if you really do all the exploration and try to find all the collectibles, it'll take you 6 to 8 if you really want to sit there and do all that. But I mean, it's short, and it's a kind of a point-and-click adventure.
It is, with some pretty good puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like the puzzles. What got me is, you know, the story, the art was just absolutely fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
That soundtrack, whew.
Yeah, soundtrack was great. What I really liked about it was the art. It was, you know, kind of, it wasn't graphic in that it wasn't real, like photorealism, so you didn't have like all the blood and everything with the war, but you didn't need that to show how awful was, how they were able to depict it with the kind of almost comic booky art style was fantastic.
I just, man, when I was putting this on here, I almost kind of wanted to reinstall again just to go back through it. But man, it was such a good game. Such a good game. And it's cheap. And if you have PC, I'm pretty sure it's going to go on Steam sale starting some point.
I wonder if it's actually easier to play on PC than console, because, man, like that last level where you had to dig through the trenches was kind of a beast.
Yeah, it was actually pretty easy.
Yeah, it was a beast on the analog sticks. But started it and I was playing, and I was like, huh, you know, there really hasn't been any video games about the First World War. Why is that? And you get like an hour in, oh, that's right, because it was awful. It was a horrible war. People died in horrible ways. There were horrible things going on. And the cool thing about Valiant Hearts is that it's the story of about three or four people. Most of them are part of the same family. How they were all in different parts of the war, but yet how they all managed to intersect and try to get back to one another.
Yep.
And, you know, I'm not going to spoil anything, but man, get the tissues for the end.
Yeah, that was one of the harder games to, because you knew that that was going to be, you kind of knew that that was going to be the last that you were going to be playing the game, and then just.
But how they did it.
Yeah, just doing what you had to do, I was just like, wow, this is one of the hardest, I don't want to beat this game at the current moment.
Yep. Oh, I was boo-hooing, like bad.
Yeah. That one stuck with me for a couple days. That ending. That was a really solid game.
So your number three looks to be a little happier conversation than Wolfenstein or Valiant Hearts.
It is. And actually, what made me put it on here was the reviews for this game. It's kind of like, it's Mario Kart 8. And it's, you know, on the Wii U. Yes, it's just another Mario Kart. But I think that this one, you know, for me, it deserves to be on a Game of the Year list because it was a ton of fun. And then they released that Hyrule DLC, and it was just like just venturing back into old SNES kind of Mario Karting days, because when you do the Hyrule Castle, all of the, instead of it being coins, they're rupees. So you're collecting those as you go around, and they had the old Star Road, and...
Okay, that sounds like fun.
If I'm not mistaken, there's like an F-Zero track, and it's like I really miss a good F-Zero game. There hasn't been a good F-Zero game in so damn long. But it's just a lot of fun. I mean, we had the Luigi Death Stare meme kick up after this game for at least a week. I mean,
longer than that. It was funny though. I remember the original video I saw that. I was like, oh, holy crap, that's. Damn, Luigi, you scary.
He's evil.
But, I was totally waiting for him just to kind of do this.
Yeah. And then as he drives by, he's just like... taking you down. So, I mean, it's a good bit of fun. What's your number three? Oh, we just did that one.
My number three was Valiant Hearts. But our number twos are the same, because it's the best game in ever.
It's
Diablo 3, the Ultimate Evil Edition, which is the Reaper of Souls expansion for the next-gen consoles. Well, actually, I think it's for all consoles. But regardless, we played it on PlayStation 4.
Yep.
And, oh man, just the graphical facelift alone from the PS3 to the PS4 is... amazing to begin with, because I still play my PS3 version because I still gotta get that last trophy, and at this rate might take me years. But but when I go back and forth, it never ceases to amaze me the differences and how what they were able to, you know, fine tune it and make it so crisp and bright. And it's hard to explain why I like this game so much, because the story kind of blows.
The story itself is not all that, it's pretty much forgettable. But for me, I mean, I played it on my PC. What I enjoyed about playing it on the console was using the controller. I liked the interface. The UI on it was a lot nicer than on the PC. And it was so much fun. And they brought in a lot of the stuff that was on the PC. They, you know, the PC gets it first, and then they bring it over to the console in a patch. But you know, like when Yumi and Blake were all running around playing, that's a ton of fun. It's just something that you can easily sit down and just, you can run a rift in, you know, 45 minutes. You can do it in 15 if you're really just trying to hammer one out. The
That's the
bounties.
problem, is I would sit there like, I'll just do a couple of bounties, and 10 bounties later, like, oh crap, I'm late.
Yep. It was, yeah. At lunch, I'd be like, okay, I'm gonna do all the bounties in this area, and then I'm gonna be done. Oh, well, you know, I got all these rift keys. I might as well just run a rift. It won't take that long. You know what? I should go clear the bounties out in this area. Oh, shit. It's 2 hours later. So it's, you know, for me, I think what it is, the addicting thing is that once you get so powerful, just destroying stuff, and then all the loot. So they're
So much
when
loot.
they fix that, when they did the loot 2.0 stuff, that it definitely made the game a lot more fun. So
Well, I mean, and even like the fifth act is probably one of my favorite acts now. It's not just because I haven't played it like repeatedly like I have the first four. I think it adds a different dynamic, and it actually kind of made, and I like the side quests that you now have with your companions. Because now it's just like, okay, so it's not, you know, the tank, the loudmouth, you know, crossbow guy who doesn't shut up, and you know, the enchantress. It's like they actually have these cool backstories that you get to explore on your way to conquesting Mothael. Even learning a little bit more about Tyriel and so some of the other characters that you're having to deal with when you're all trapped in, I forget what that city's called, where you're holed up. But so there, to me, there's a little bit more to the story that kind of delves more into it instead of just, you know, just grinding through. And yes, the loot is still awesome, and the hack and slash is still what makes that part of the game fun. But the fifth act just, I think, just made it a little more dynamic, a little more interesting than the first four. Because after I played through the first four, I kind of stopped. I was like, yeah, this, whatever, keep pressing X, skip through all the talking, stop talking Kane, stop talking Adria. And when I got to the fifth act, I really liked talking to all the my companions and hearing like their thoughts on what this going on with this, and even Tyriel, and even some of like the blacksmith's little apprentice that he finds. Like, that interaction is a little more interesting. And so it's almost like they tried a little bit more
Yeah.
with the fifth act. And of course, then the whole idea with like the bounties and the rifts, and I still haven't gotten into one of the treasure vaults, but I hear that's just amazing when you're actually able to open up one of those. And
Oh, the best part about the rifts is when you, because if you've never played it, but if you've, essentially a rift is, it just basically, it takes a random level from the game and then puts random enemies in it. So because it's all randomly generated, you can actually run across a room that is full of treasure goblins and have to destroy all them. And now they've added in anything where every once in a while, a treasure goblin will drop a key so that way you can get into their gate and go raid their stash. And they also have the treasure goblins that are all rainbowy that take you right to Whimsyshire.
see, if only they had that in the original PlayStation 3 version, I could get that 5 million gold in a hurry. I'm only like, what, 3.2 million away? I'm never going to get there.
Nah, you're gonna be doing this all through 2015. This should be a goal for
Probably.
next year.
That'd be great.
So
Yeah.
what do you have for number one?
My number one, I called this game back in 2012 as game of the year, and I'm sticking to it because it delivered in all aspects, and that is South Park: Stick of Truth.
You know, this was on Steam sale at Thanksgiving, and I bought it. I just need to play it.
Yes, you do. You need to play it. Be prepared to laugh at the most inappropriate things. Like, you'll feel bad about yourself for finding things funny. The turn-based con the only reason why I would be negative on this is that the turn-based combat is not stellar, and that some of the, because it's turn-based combat, but it's also interactive turn-based. So like a good example is, like, if you played Lost Odyssey, you couldn't just give orders to your team and just sit back and go. You actually had to pay attention. Especially with your immortals, you had to press a button at the right time in order to activate a certain power. This does the same thing. You it's kind of quick-timey event. And especially if you want to do other random stuff, like throw a fart on someone in the middle of a game, which, yes, you can do that, because if you fail that, you will shit your pants. But it was just how it was very creative, like how they took this idea of these kids just LARPing for fun and turned it into this grand scale, huge event where all of South Park got involved, and you know, and all your favorite characters are involved in some way, except for Chef, of course. But like, you know, Al Gore makes an appearance, who's actually one of the hardest bosses in the game, and you have to, you know, you have to make friends and put them in Facebook, and you don't even get to name your character, because no matter what you name your character, they call you douchebag. It doesn't matter what you do. That's just your name. I played as a Jew. That was the class that I chose, which was a lot of fun, because it's just not your typical, you know, mage or anything like that. But, you know, like, Butters was a paladin, and if you got his summoning high enough, he just became like this Thor god of thunder and just like smite everybody. Even Cartman, like when he and I would party up with him and I'd throw his fire spell, what he did was he would light a fart on people. But it was very, very creative, but you know, expect obviously, you know, boundaries to be crossed. And oh. Every way possible. Like, you have to perform a fake abortion.
Oh.
There are zombie aborted fetuses. Actually, they're zombie Nazi aborted fetuses.
Oh.
And when you get to the zombie Nazi part, the Nazi zombie part, it's kind of because one of the generals is like, Nazi zombies? Oh, that's so overdone. But... And when you find them, they actually will talk to you. Like, they actually have, like, old recordings from back in World War II of, you know, the Nazi speeches. So, yeah.
Damn.
When they go all the way in offending people, they put in 150%.
Well, it is South Park, so, you know, kind of got to expect it.
And it's even one of those where... When you get to the end, it wasn't like, oh, that was it. It was actually still pretty good. The ending was what it was very good for a game of this magnitude. Because, you know, sometimes when you get build up, the ending's a letdown. But this one actually had a pretty good ending. And it's also one of those that you can still, it still will let you open up and explore South Park if you want to get all those collectibles. Because you got to catch all 100 of those chim Pokemon.
Oh, Jesus. Oh, damn it.
So what about you? What's your number one?
It should come as no surprise. It's Dark Souls 2. Actually...
And you crazy people in your Dark Souls.
Yeah, I know. They just announced this week that they're essentially going to do like the Prepare to Die edition when it was on for Dark Souls 1. They're going to release another edition coming out I think next year that contains all the DLC, so... That'll be the one that I pick up on the PC. And people that are still playing Dark Souls 1, rejoice on PC because they just removed Games for Windows and moved it over to Steamworks. So that's a free patch. Yeah. But, nope, it's, you know, I'm a Dark Souls addict, so I very much enjoy just playing the same boss over and over and over. Getting my ass handed to me over and over and over and...
You guys are just masochistic.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you can't really comment on the story because there's not a whole lot of story to go off of. And
that's what I've heard.
I mean, there's a lot of lore there, but you have to go find it. It's not in the game. You have to actually go to websites because there's a lot of lore that, that's there. You just have to read it outside of the game, which is kind of annoying. But, you know, I like what they did with this one. I like the subtle changes. Like, if you die, your health bar keeps shrinking until you, you know, crush an effigy to make it all better. And
wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's nuts.
Every time you die, you lose a little bit of life, and then you run out of effigies, so you end up having to go back to certain areas of the game and farm effigies, so that way you can get your life back. And I haven't touched any of the DLC. I've watched a couple of the streamers doing the DLC, and it looks like it's pretty awesome. So I'm looking forward to it.
This does not sound pleasant to me.
Well, that's why I'm looking forward to Bloodborne, so there we go.
I was about to ask you if you're looking forward to Bloodborne.
Oh, hell yeah. Dark Souls with guns in a like steampunkish kind of setting? Oh, hell yeah. Sign me up for that one. Oh, yeah.
Horror.
I'm all over that one. So, yeah. Next year, you could probably see Bloodborne. Yeah,
I go in nowhere near that. Or Dying Light, or... But also the horror stuff. Oh, Resident Evil Revelations 2, Resident Evil HD. Yeah. Nope, stand far away from the things that make me scream and throw controllers and just, you know, what did Ross do when he played Outlast? Nope. Yep, that would be me.
Oh, that scared us, too. That was the best part. It scared Blake and I because we were not prepared for that.
No interest. Okay, well, that wraps up our game. So what about the guides? Like, I only have three because I already explained why. So let me start with you, Chris. Why don't you go through your top guides of the...
My number five was Diablo 3, the Reaper of Souls. It's pretty much...
But you had that for the PC version, right?
Yes.
Yeah, see, I got it for the console version, and it's not on my list, because there are... I can't remember off of my head, but I remember I was looking through my reviews. Oh, yeah, they did have that. It wasn't as complete as the Diablo 3 from the previous version.
Let me make sure that... where is it at? Oh, no. I thought it was a hardcover. Because by the time I got it, I'd already been playing Reaper of Souls. So if you hadn't already been playing it and weren't following up, you know, it gave you a good introduction to what Loot 2.0 was going to do. It gave you a good introduction to the new Crusader class that they introduced with the Reaper of Souls expansion. Yeah, now some of it's kind of outdated because obviously you're not patching a book, so you don't have stuff like the Greater Rifts, and you don't have the Goblin hideouts and that kind of thing. But as an introduction and getting you up to speed as to what was going on with Diablo 3 and the whole storyline and all the new patching, all the new stuff that they introduced into the expansion, it did a really good job on that. So, and their Loot 2.0 wasn't just like a small two-page chunk. It was a sizable, you know, breakdown of what's going on. So,
It looks like they might have had a little bit more to go over with the PC version because, you know, the console, technically we already kind of had the Loot 2.0 with the first console version. So I just felt like there wasn't as much details going into all the stuff that you could do in the Ultimate Evil Edition. And maybe they just tried to crank it out real fast because it was coming out the console, and they might not have put as much effort into it since they already did do one for PC.
Yeah, that's going to be my guess. Is that they probably just took the PC one and then updated it in some sort of way.
Right.
Because I could see that. Let's face it, the PC version didn't really change much. You know, the console didn't really change a whole lot between the PC version, so they just kind of brought the two in line by the time when Ultimate Evil came out. So.
Right.
I think the PC version was a little bit further ahead because we were still doing... We were doing a couple other things that was on the console at that time. Anyway... for number four, I put down Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze, and this is just because it saved me from breaking my fucking highly expensive Wii U controller, so.
I forgot that game even came out this year.
Oh, yeah. It's a good time.
I guess that was earlier this year, like spring?
Okay. Late spring, early summer, I think.
Oh, okay. That's why. After E3, my mind's just blanked on everything.
Yeah. I mean, Nintendo had a pretty good year. It was really hard not to put a lot more Nintendo games on here. I was trying to keep it diversified, but the guy did a pretty good job of following along with what you needed to do and keeping you from throwing your controller, because Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze has a lot to do in it. There's a lot of unlock this, then go back to this stage and try it again, try to, you know, do all the challenges and that kind of thing. So, I mean, it's not Dark Souls 2 hard, but...
What I understood is, like, you could, you know, kind of like the first Donkey Kong Country, you could blow through it in a couple of hours.
Oh, you could.
But if you want to get that 100% completion,
oh, yeah,
there's
you were
a
spending,
lot to do.
Yeah, you're spending a lot of time there.
Because I remember the first Donkey Kong Country, the one on Super NES, when I first played it, and a friend and I, we played it together, and we beat it, and our percentage was like 20%. After beating the game, it was 20%. It's like, holy crap, what are all we missing?
Oh, yeah, there's a lot to do. It's a good time. So, let's go to you, because now we're both at number three.
Okay, so my number three was Assassin's Creed Unity. And while the game is, I know you're playing the game right now, the game itself is pretty straightforward. To me, it wasn't as complicated as Assassin's Creed games in the past in terms of how to go about attacking a group or, you know, sneaking into an area and finding this. Or maybe I've just gotten better at these games. I have no idea. But what the guide did really well, though, was that it saved me, I don't know, probably a lot of frustration for the final boss. Because the final boss is not very obvious in what you need to do. I probably would have died several times, because there's two stages to it. In the first stage, thanks to the guide, I was able to do it first try. But if I didn't have the guide, I probably would have died several times going, what the hell am I doing wrong? And even like the second stage is still not very obvious what you're supposed to do to fight this guy. But the big thing about Assassin's Creed Unity is, oh my god, the collectibles. Yes, all the collectibles are on the maps. Like, it's not like Assassin's Creed's in the past where the treasure chests were not on the map, so you had to just randomly find them. And the same thing with, like, you know, the banners and the feathers, they were never on the maps. Well, now all the stuff is on the map, so you're thinking, well, why do I need the guide? Well, yes, you can use the guide to help you kind of tick all the collectibles, but the big thing about it is the enigmas, the enigma mysteries, which are the Nostradamus enigmas, they're riddles. And basically you have to, it tells you where you need to go, and you have to go to a certain place in Paris and try to find where the next enigma is until you solve the riddle. Well, you know what? Nobody got time for that.
Yeah. Because they're...
I just sit there with the guide like, where do I need to go next? Thank you. Where do I need to go next? Thank you.
Yeah, and I tried using some of the
places. They have the gigantic map to, you know, you go, mm-hmm. Oh, okay, that's where that is. And there's also a lot of strategy for the heists, which is a co-op mission that I've only done once because I hate them. Because the heists, you have to be 100% stealth.
Oh, damn.
You're seen, you get ejected. So, which I suck at that. So the guide actually gives a lot of good information on how to go through it without being seen. Of course, you have to have a partner who's willing to let you plan out what the strategy guide says. Usually they just want to go and do whatever they want to do, because they want to do it trial and error, and like I said, nobody has time for that.
Hey, nobody got time for that.
But that and I guess like some of the murder mysteries as well. Like, I really enjoy the murder mystery part of Assassin's Creed Unity. Probably one of my favorites because, like, you know, I played Sherlock Holmes earlier this year and I love that, and Murdered Soul Suspect, love that. But it has the same idea in Assassin's Creed Unity, but I don't want to make a mistake in my accusation, so I always double check myself because I'm a cheater, dirty cheat, I guess. I don't use it to find out who did it. I use it to double check and make sure that I was right. And then I, you know, do the little fist pump and then accuse the guy.
Yeah, I've only done one of those so far.
They're fun. It's different. It's very different.
It's a different.
Oh, the other thing I love about the guide is that there's so many side quests in the game, and not just when I'm talking about the murder mysteries and whatever, and I, like the Paris stories. And I tried doing some of the Paris stories early on, and you fail at them every single time. Well, the guide actually tells you when is the best time to even try any of the side quests. It's like, you must have this, this, and this ability in order to do it without being seen or to survive it to begin with and things like that. So, because normally, because we usually when, you know, stuff opens up, you want to go on ahead and do it immediately. Well, Assassin's Creed Unity is not like that. You don't have the powers to do it, which is kind of, a problem with the game design.
Mm-hmm.
But the guide will help clear a lot of that frustration, because like you see this quest that has like a one diamond, you're like, oh, that's super easy. Well, you actually can't, you really can't do it. You probably could, but you couldn't do it well until I think you get to like halfway through the game and through the main campaign. So the guide even recommends that you don't even do any side quests until you get through sequence 9, which is almost near the end game.
Damn.
So anyway, so what's your number 3?
My number 3 was Tales of Azalea 2. It was, there's a lot of stuff to do in that game, and the guy did a pretty good job at breaking it down. So, it took me, I don't know, this game, at minimum, should it be like a 40 to 60 hour game? I think if you try to do everything in it, it's, you know, probably 80 to 100. So, I think I did it, knocked it out in 52-ish hours, somewhere up in there.
That's a lot of time.
It is, but, some of that is I would get to, like, a boss, and then I'd sit down and find the boss in the book and read up on what I was going to do with the boss. So there's, 5 minutes of me sitting there reading that, going through everything that's going to happen, then playing it, moving on, trying to find something. Like, if I was in a new area trying to, I'd just kind of stand there and I'd go through the book, get the guide to figure out what it is all that I needed to do and see if there's a couple things that I could knock out in one, in a more efficient kind of manner. So,
mm-hmm. Well, those Tales games I know are huge. I've never played one, but I don't remember which. Someone who plays Tales games, she said that she'd spend at least 100 to 150 hours on them.
Oh, yeah. You could definitely do that. If you don't have a guide, oh, yeah. There's a lot of it's a pretty in-depth game.
Yeah,
and it's colorful.
Again, nobody's got time for that.
Shit.
Oh. Well, my last two guides of the year are actually both Nintendo games.
Yeah, Nintendo games.
Yeah, first one is Bayonetta 2.
Yes.
Which Bayonetta 2 is one of those that also has, like, you can burn through it in probably, 2-3 hours if you really just burn straight through it. But there's so much to do in it. There's all these optional levels that you can do. There's all these collectibles you can find. There's like little mini games that you can do. And the guide was, well, before it was destroyed by my son, the guide was really great at, showing you exactly where all those hidden levels are. Because Platinum Games likes throwing in the hidden levels, the hidden optional levels that you don't have to do. But if you do them, there's a pretty good reward for you. And the guide was really great at breaking down where the collectibles were, the best, most efficient way to do them, when you should come back and do them. It broke down, like, all the co-op, how to get all the various costumes, and it also broke down for me, which helped me learn some of the moves, because some of the moves just aren't that intuitive. Like, when it just shows you, like, the button presses, and the guide actually was help teach me how to do some of those, which I had so many problems with in the first Bayonetta. So the Bayonetta 2 guide does not have the guide from the first Bayonetta, and the Bayonetta 2 game has the first Bayonetta game, but that's because actually Bayonetta 2, that strategy guide, never got approved in the U.S. It is a Future Press Europe only, and the guide is about, 3 inches thick. And they said it took them, they said that their gamers are working on that guide spent a total of 60,000 hours going through it because of all the, you think collectibles are the same in Bayonetta 2? They are more insane than the first one, because only certain collectibles show up in certain areas of the game depending on what difficulty you're playing. So if you want to get through all of that, then yeah, they had to play it several times, which they totally got rid of that in Bayonetta 2, thank God. Because, seriously, I'm not playing through that 10 million times. But Chris, I can't hear you. is the fun of live video. I feel like I should sing or something. Yeah, Chris has issues with this mic sometimes. I guess.
Oh, this is great.
There we go. Let's wrap this up quickly. Nope. I just lost you again.
What?
There you go. Now I hear you.
Yeah, it mutes your mic as soon as you unplug it, so.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, then, let's try this again. So, my number two, I'm having a toss-up, actually. I have Ultra Street Fighter 4 down here.
Uh-huh.
I might just say spoiler because it's I'm working on the Super Smash Brothers guide at the current moment, and that one is really damn good too. Because it does such a good job of breaking down all the stuff that you can do in the game, but the 3DS has one special mode, and the Wii U version has another mode, and the guide actually goes through both games. So it tackles, like, the fighting and all that stuff is all done, the characters and all that doesn't change, but then when you get to the stages, and so the stages are broken down, you have the Wii U, and then you have the 3DS, and then you have all this extra stuff that you can do. So, like, Smash Run on the 3DS, it gets its own little section. It's not even coming off my head right now, but, you know, to collect all the challenges in the Wii U version.
Did you have Smash Brothers on the 3DS as well as the Wii U, or did you just get it once?
No, I have it on both. So I've actually gone through to...
You're dedicated.
Yeah, and I had no idea that if you bought both of them, you got Mewtwo later on as a free character download, so apparently I got that because I took some time and registered all my stuff on the Nintendo website, so...
Oh, nice.
And you can apparently... I haven't been able to really try it, but apparently you can play... there's an option on the Wii U version to connect to the 3DS, so I haven't broken down to try that yet.
Okay.
But...
Huh.
That one's... It's a really... That guide is pretty solid. I would definitely recommend it, especially if you own both versions, because it makes Smash Run and the challenge modes that much easier.
Oh, okay.
So,
that brings me to my number one. This is a challenge mode. It's a nice little segue in to Hyrule Warriors.
That was such a fun game.
Which has a campaign mode and a challenge mode. And that challenge mode, you could easily waste 200 hours of your life trying to work through that challenge mode. Because of all the stuff you have to do and all the collectibles you can do, because only parts of it unlock only after you complete certain parts of the campaign. Then you have to complete certain, get certain trophies and the challenges to be able to get to other challenges. And then there's the regular mode and the super hardcore mode. And all together is like all these Gold Skulls Hollows you can try to get through all those different modes. And it is absolutely insane. So I did only a few bits of the challenges, and I saw like life would just disappear. So like, okay, I have to stop. But Hyrule Warriors, because I've never played a Dynasty Warriors game, so this is my first real experience with that. There were some valuable tips on the campaign, part of the guide, on how to not get those fail states. Not just about not dying, but just to avoid the fail states from, you know, letting certain people die or letting this get run over or blah, yada, yada, yada. And is also valuable in helping find those Gold Skull Tullas, because whenever you got the conditions for a Gold Skull Tulla, you had a certain time limit to run over there, and it would kind of tell you the area it was in.
Mm-hmm.
You could kind of hear it, but you may not be able to see where it is, maybe hidden or something, and it may be across a rift that the only way you can get there is from the other side of the map. And the guide was very helpful in helping you find all those Skulltulas, just to get in that, be in the proper area. because the time limit would happen quickly. And it was always fun when there was a boss fight going on at the same time and you couldn't leave the boss fight to go after the Skulltula.
Nice.
So that is my strategy guide of the year. It might be the same if I had played everything I wanted to play, but you know, I'm pretty sure the other guides I have, like Sunset Overdrive and Call of Duty Advanced Warfare and Lego Batman 3, oh my gosh, Lego Batman is this thick. So I'm sure it is packed full of goodness too. So I feel bad I haven't gotten through everything, but we're only so many people.
Yep.
We do our best. But that's my guide of the year. I have a feeling I know what your guide of the year is.
No, I'm pretty sure you don't. Nobody would even guess this. It's Dark Souls 2.
Which I would probably need a guide, lots of holding and alcohol to get through that game.
Yeah, you know, they did a really good job on the first guide, and they just did a phenomenal job on this guide too. It's one that I still kind of use from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
To go back and just kind of reread. Sometimes, you know, you forget something or whatever, but yeah. I mean, it's definitely an encyclopedia kind of read. It's not something I would say is going to be a whole lot of fun, but, you know, it covers the game really, really well. Except mm-hmm. for all the DLC, obviously, but the main game, yeah, it tackled that fantastically. So I should probably bring it with me when I go to Arizona next week, because I have a feeling my brother-in-law might actually use it. Because he's a Dark Souls fan too, so.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. If I drop it off, maybe he'll pick it up. That'd be awesome. But it is pretty. It's also a very sexy guide. It's very nice, so.
And that was a Future Press one, right?
Yes.
They did the first Dark Souls, correct?
Correct.
Okay.
And they're both hardcovers.
Well, all the Future Press ones are hardcovers. They don't do like a limited edition in paperback. They're like, nope, we give you all the awesomeness.
In one go around.
In one go. Yep.
So, well, that covers how great the year is. Considering yes. that this is going to be the end of it for us for this year, what are you going to do over your vacation?
Well, I finished my last game I need to play for review yesterday.
Hooray!
All I have to do is write it up as Halo Master Chief Collection. Which there is not a guide collection for that. Which I'm kind of disappointed in because Halo 2 has new collectibles.
Mm-hmm.
Although they're not very hard. If I was able to find all of them but two my first time through, I don't think it's going to be that hard. But I think for the most part, the game is pretty much the same. I never finished Halo 2 before because the Xbox original Xbox graphics were so bad. I was having too much trouble seeing where the flood was coming from, and all those problems have been fixed. There was actually textures. Sometimes it looked like the flood's coming out of the walls because everything looks a little different. The game is, just like before, the game is great until the flood shows up, because that's the case with every Halo game. The game is fantastic until the flood shows up.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm pretty much done with that, because I thought about replaying all of them. I was like, I want to replay those games again, but then I remember, oh, wait, the library. I don't want to go through that again. Halo 3 I might replay. But Halo 4 I've now played three times, so I don't really have a huge motivation to replay it again, even on Xbox One. So I don't know. But my plan is now that I got all that done, is I'm going to get back to Sunset Overdrive so I can review that guide. Like I said, I finished the game, all those side quests. So now I can go after all those comic books and complete that side quest, along with all the other wonderful side quests. And then I also hope to maybe start Call of Duty Advanced Warfare. I mean, that should be a short game. It's a Call of Duty game.
Yep.
And maybe finally crack open Lego Batman 3. I'm embarrassed that I've had this game and haven't even had a chance to open it. And maybe I will finish Dragon Age Origins. Actually, next week I have 2 days in a row where I don't have the kids at all, so I figure that'll be the best mm-hmm. time to sit down and force myself to finish it.
Awesome.
Stop being afraid of that final boss and just do it.
Just do it.
That's right. So what about you?
Well, I'll be traveling, so I'll be in Arizona. So unfortunately, I'm not going to remote play to my PS4. So I'm going to play a lot of portables. So Pokemon Alpha Sapphire, because I'm still collecting
Incredible.
all the damn thing, all the damn goodness. Defense Grid 2, because I can play it on my, I'm bringing my Surface Pro. So I
Okay.
might actually try to load up South Park on that and see if it runs. So
I
Defense
bet
Grid
it will.
2, and some Smash Bros. 3DS. So airport time. And I'm gonna bring my Vita. So oh, and then there's the Steam sale, which starts tomorrow. I'm so sorry, wallet. You're gonna hate me by the time this is over. So, and probably some random stuff off my Vita. Oh, and The Binding of Isaac. Yeah, because that's on my Vita. That plays really fun on that, so.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm doing anything on the Steam sale. There is one PC game that I did not play this year that I've been told is really, really good. I want to check it out if it's on sale, and that's The Vanishing Ethan Carter.
I haven't even seen that one.
It's okay. The people that created people behind People Can Fly, they did Bulletstorm, and they did the last Gears of War game. They, most of them, the founders left People Can Fly and formed their own indie studio called Astronaut. And their first game is The Vanishing of Ethan Carter. And apparently, it's a murder mystery. So it's kind of like Murdered Soul Suspect in that all you do is explore and try to solve a murder. So I'm always down for that.
Good times. Put it on
Yeah.
your Steam
So
list.
if that goes on sale, then I'll probably pick it up. Because otherwise, I mean, I want to give them the full money, but man, I'm so broke right now. It's just going to have to wait.
Well, just put it on your Steam wish list, and if it goes on sale, you'll get a nice little email that says a game on your wish
Yes.
list is for sale.
Yes, that's how they always get me. The game that you want on your wish list is $1 today. Fine. Take
Yeah,
my buck.
I just got that email. What game is it? It's because it's six. Oh, Dungeon of the Endless. Yeah,
Oh.
that's on sale today. Kind of trying to not. I'm refraining, but I'm gonna break. So, yeah, breaking.
Well, we've gone on for a rather long time, and I have to go pee. So let's wrap this up. You can, of course, you can find us both on strategyguidereviews.com, where we actually do review strategy guides. I know we've been behind, but we do review them, I promise. Of course, that I'm still writing at actiontrip.com, and you can find Chris's Twitter at Starven. That's Starven. And my personal Twitter is Crunchy Chocobo, and the Strategy Guide Reviews Twitter is at Strategy Reviews. All right, thanks so much for sticking with us for this episode. We will see you in 2015.
Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Peace.